Hello, it's Debbie back again. It is Wednesday, July 15th, 2015, here with the Decatur Herald and Review. Starting with a state item from 4 hours ago. Update: Illinois has never been a state where its leaders followed the rules. While many of our leaders have made the state the butt of jokes about its multiple imprisoned politicians, the fact is those in power don't even follow some of the basic tenets of the state constitution. Somewhat lost in the battle over budget and what Governor Bruce Rauner is saying about House Speaker Mike Madigan and Senate President John Cullerton, and vice versa, is the fact the Illinois Constitution calls for the state's budget to be balanced. The wording is pretty clear. The Constitution states proposed expenditures shall not exceed funds estimated to be available for the fiscal year as shown in the budget. However, the concept of a balanced budget in Illinois is a joke, and a very bad joke at that. A punchline is a massive budget deficit, billions of dollars of debt, and fairly wide acknowledgement that Illinois is not only in the worst financial shape of all 50 states, it is also the worst run state in the union. In spite of a constitutional amendment to do so, the General Assembly has not passed a balanced budget since 2001. Every year, some type of trick is used to give the illusion the budget appears balanced, but it isn't really. Standard operating procedure is to pass bills stuffed full of goodies to send to the governor. The idea is the legislators can be heroes by getting funded for their pet projects, and if the mean old governor vetoes the pet project, it's the chief executive's fault. The problem with that is that we have had weak-willed governors who don't want to make anyone unhappy, so any cuts made to the unbalanced budget sent to the executive office are not enough to produce a balanced budget. So the debt mounts and the fiscal hole gets deeper. So here we are. Rauner vetoed most of the budget sent to him by the Democratic-controlled legislature, saying it was unconstitutionally out of balance by more than $3 billion. Rather than simply raise taxes to fill a gap, Rauner first wants a series of changes to worker compensation laws and civil lawsuits favored by the business community. He also wants a property tax freeze, term limits, and a new way of drawing the state's political maps. Madigan has essentially said the budget should have been signed and that the two sides would work on closing the gap later. Now Democrats are pushing a temporary budget to keep the government operating. Even removing politics from this discussion, there is not a balanced budget in play anywhere. The Illinois Policy Institute has brought up an interesting point about the General Assembly's regard for the Constitution. Diana Rickard, Vice President of Communication for the Institute, said a few months ago, lawmakers threw up their hands and said pension reform is dead because the Constitution says they can't change benefits. But now, many of the same guys turn around and send the governor an unbalanced budget, ignoring this constitutional requirement. The Institute has been calling for Illinois to strengthen its balanced budget requirement. Among their recommended reforms are deficits cannot be carried forward, borrowing fund sweeps and financing debt cannot be counted as revenues, and the comptroller must verify and endorse planned expenditures as less than or equal to revenues estimates. Almost every state has public budget hearings, negotiations over spending, and compromises made to reach a point where spending equals available revenue. Sadly, that is not the case in Illinois, where bloated budgets are approved and everyone goes home happy. This year, with Rauner in office, the process has not ended as happily. The best scenario is for everyone to gather in a room, make difficult choices, and present Illinois in something they haven't seen in more than a decade, a balanced budget. That is the editorial from the Decatur Herald and Review, as you probably gathered. Next article. Headline: Zom Dungeon is named principal at Eisenhower. This is from Valerie Wells, Herald and Review staff writer, Decatur. The Decatur School Board named Amy Zom Dungeon to the position of principal of Eisenhower High School at its meeting on Tuesday. She replaces Michael Dugan, who is now an assistant superintendent. Zom Dungeon was formerly assistant principal at Eisenhower. In other business, the board approved the implementation of a STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math theme for the French Academy in the coming school year, and also approved an agreement with Big Brothers Big Sisters for a mentoring program for high school students. Students in the Pathways to Prosperity internship program, which was piloted last school year and will be expanded in the coming year, will now receive credit for participation. Okay, so the students in that program will now receive credit for participation. A public hearing was set for the Macon-Piatt Special Education District budget for 6:30 p.m. Tuesday, August 11th. Executive Director Kathy Massey gave a presentation on the proposed budget, which has some changes from last year. Capital outlay will be about half of last year's amount, she said, now that the two high school renovations are complete and much-needed equipment has been added to special education classrooms in those buildings. Salary expenses will be higher in this year's budget because last year, special education was spending down some of its excess funds. Salary and benefits combined are approximately 94% of the district's total budget. The board also approved a collective bargaining agreement with the new security officers union, which provides security at both middle schools, both high schools, the alternative education program, and Hope Academy. There's been a lot of talk that $15 an hour is a livable wage, said Todd Colvolt, chief operational officer. At a minimum, they'll be paid that much in fiscal year 2016. Jeffrey Perkins, founder of Caring Black Men, a group of volunteers who visit 13 of the district's 22 schools weekly to mentor boys from kindergarten through high school, gave an update on the program. The men visit 300 boys a week, he said, and expanded its school year efforts to a weekly summer program at Mueller Park on Thursdays, where the men provide a golf clinic, lunch, and baseball clinic. The lunch break offers a chance to do what the men do during the school year, which is to spend time talking to the young men. It's just men talking to young men, Perkins said. A lot of them don't have that in their lives. End of the article. Next article, Hunger for Fresh Food, Goal of Garden Party at Torrance Park. Cute picture heading up this article, kids dressed as bugs from left. Well, anyway, Wendy Taylor leads a tour through the Ladybug Mountain Children's Learning Garden at the corner of Jordan and Marietta Streets with Decatur Police Officer Adam Seifert and other children during Taylor's garden party at Torrance Park. Decatur. This is posted 6 hours ago by Teresa Churchill from the Herald and Review. She's a senior writer. Decatur. Arnani Goodman may have been the only ripe pumpkin in Ladybug Mountain Children's Learning Garden and a perspiring one at that, but she was also a very proud one. The 10-year-old helped lead a tour taken by about 20 people and helped identify everything from potatoes and tomatoes to turnips, mustard, and collard greens. I helped plant everything and pull weeds out, Arnani said. The tour was the highlight of a veggie costume party, part of a summer program for children in Torrance Park, provided by neighborhood resident Wendy Taylor, who grows vegetables in Ladybug Mountain at Jordan and Marietta Streets, plus two other gardens for Decatur is growing gardeners. Participants dressed up as vegetables and before being turned loose for free play in the park, enjoyed a snack of lettuce, carrots, cucumbers, and salad dressing. I don't like carrots, but carrots with ranch dressing are good, said Amory Ward, 7, who came to the party dressed as a bumblebee. Taylor said she's been providing activities and lunch for children in Torrance Park ever since the Decatur Park District stopped doing so 4 years ago and has involved kids in gardening since she became a DIGG grower. When I asked children where their food came from, they thought it came from the store, Taylor said. They had no clue. Other activities include participating in the Decatur Public Library's summer reading program and going swimming at the Decatur Family YMCA. Trina White said she liked bringing her daughters age 11 and 10 because she doesn't have a way to teach them about gardening the way her mother taught her. I grew up in my mom's garden, but I don't have one, White said. This is as close as we get. Special guests Monday evening were Decatur police officers Jordan Gerard and Adam Seifman, who let the children try out the lights, siren, and radio on their police vehicle. Taliana Smith, 11, was paying her first visit to Taylor's program, and she was wearing a red shirt from Parsons School, called herself a tomato. I saw a lot of vegetables I'd like to eat, Taliana said. Watermelon, green beans, sweet corn, and sweet potatoes. I'll be back. End of the article by Churchill. Next article, headlined, Man Arrested for Breaking In, Hitting Woman 60. Decatur. This is by Huey Freeman, a staff writer for the Herald and Review. A 41-year-old Decatur man was arraigned Tuesday on three criminal counts, including aggravated battery, for allegedly breaking into the house of a woman older than 60, then shoving her to the floor, causing her to be injured. The victim told police she was sitting in her living room about 10 p.m. July 8th with her granddaughter, Gregory L. Seitz, and another woman drinking alcohol and listening to music. After Seitz became upset and called her granddaughter a lesbian, he left the home, according to an affidavit by Decatur Police Patrol Officer Bradley Hall. The woman then locked the door to her house. Seitz, who lived nearby, returned to the woman's property, standing in her front yard, yelling and screaming. She told him he was not welcome and needed to leave. Gregory kicked the front door, entered the residence, the woman told the police. He then shoved her to the floor and yelled at the other two women. The accusation directed at the younger woman apparently stemmed from her seating position near the other woman rather than near Seitz. Seitz then left the house. Police officers arrived a short time later and began searching for him. About 2:30 a.m. July 9th, as Hall was patrolling the area, he spotted Seitz on the front porch of the victim's house. Gregory saw me and ran into the residence, and I proceeded after Gregory and was able to take him into custody without incident, Hall wrote wrote in his statement. The victim told police that after the initial incident, Seitz returned to her house again, forced the locked door open. When she told him to leave immediately, he shoved her down once more. She then called the police and he left her home. During that incident, she suffered lacerations on two of her fingers. The second incident occurred a short time before the police found Seitz on her porch. Hall wrote in his statement that he observed damage to the front door frame and injuries to the victim's fingers. Seitz, who is being held in jail on $40,000 bond, is due in court July 28th. He is facing felony charges of aggravated battery and criminal trespass to a residence, as well as a misdemeanor count of criminal damage to property. End of that article. Another court's article, Decatur. Two teens held in connection with Forsyth aggravated battery. Two teenage males were booked into the Macon County Jail on preliminary charges of aggravated battery, great bodily harm, and mob action for allegedly attacking a 19-year-old man and breaking a bottle over his head, sending him to the hospital with multiple lacerations. About 12:50 a.m. Saturday, Macon County Sheriff's deputies were sent to St. Mary's Hospital on a report of a battery victim receiving treatment. The victim told the officers that the previous evening, Chance Guglielmetti, that's G-U-G-L-I-E-L-M-E-T-T-I, Guglielmetti, tackled him to the ground and struck him several times with a closed fist to his head and in his fist in his body and head, said an affidavit from Deputy James Hodges. While the assailant held him to the ground, William Gietel struck him in the head with a beer bottle, the victim said. The incident, which occurred on the 600 block of South US 51, Forsyth, was witnessed by two people who were associated with the victim. Both witnesses told police essentially the same story. They both identified Guglielmetti as the suspect who tackled, punched, and restrained the victim, and Gietel as the one who struck him in the head with a beer bottle. Gietel or Geitel is G-I-E-T-L. So there's two people. Medical staff members in the hospital emergency room closed the wounds on the top of the victim's head with staples. Guglielmetti and Gietel Gugli Menti 18, Geitel 19 are being held on $25,000 bond pending their arraignment in circuit court by Tuesday. They were ordered to have no contact with the victim if they were released. End of that article. Next article. Summer gig. Little Theater is the most coveted gig by actors of all stripes. This is news from the Herald and Review today by Donette Beckett, a staff writer for them. Sullivan. Glory Kissel has acted and sung on stages throughout the country, including Nashville, St. Louis, and Chicago. But for 10 years, she has returned to Sullivan for any opportunity to perform at the Little Theater on the Square. And she's not alone. For many actors, the Little Theater is a coveted gig. It's relaxed, kind atmosphere, Kissel said. People just love that. Professional stage actors, singers, and dancers audition each year to spend their summers in Central Illinois. We got them from all over the country, California, New York, Georgia, Chicago, Tennessee, said executive producer John Stevens. They are all professionals. Actor Josh Houghton is based out of New York, but has spent four seasons in Sullivan. I love it enough to return, he said. The atmosphere of the area is different than most cities known for their theaters. Part of the draw to Sullivan is the friendly people both on the streets and on the stage. The area is lovely and the people are wonderful, Kissel said. It's a working vacation. Although the area may be easygoing, the work is not. For professional productions, the stage is considered small. The staff relies on prop and set builders because of the limited size. It's different people every year, Stephen said. I bring people in from all over the United States. The whole staff is great, and they know how to work the space, Kissel said. They do the magic. The productions are planned a year in advance with professionals known throughout the business. For example, the designer for Julie's Swing musical is from New York. She is the associate designer for the national and international shows of Wicked. People don't understand the magnitude of talent, Stevens said. The director, producer, and choreographers who manage the theater need to be organized in advance. It's a well-oiled machine, Houghton said. They know how to put a play on with 39 hours of rehearsal. And the actors have the same responsibility. Some of these people are doing multiple shows at one time, Stephen said, and some will go to the gym at 7 in the morning. It's what they do. It's their job. Each year, the producers see hundreds of actors during auditions. According to Kissel, they know what works. It's based on talent and ability, but also based on personality and how they get along. Since the performers originate from other parts of the country, they live near each other in housing provided by the theater. It's great to live close by, Houghton said. You wake up to the sound of the piano banging away. The performers live to be on stage. There's huge competition to get here, Kissel said. They will do larger productions, but they want to come back here and work. End of the article. Next article, Lake Decatur adjusts to abundant water. There's a picture. The new docks in front of the Beach House restaurant are just inches above the water, says the caption. 6 hours ago, Allison Petty, a staff writer for the Herald and Review. Decatur. Though Lake Decatur remains within normal summer water levels, unusually heavy rains mean that water is flowing in at a rate of 3.5 billion gallons per day. All that water goes right back out again as the city's water management department releases it through the dam. We're literally turning the lake every 3 days, said Don Geiger, water production operations supervisor. I hate turning it all loose, but I don't have anywhere to put it. Heavy rains are typical in May and early June, but this level of flow is unusual midway through July, Geiger said. The lake measured 614.43 feet above sea level at 7 a.m. Tuesday, within the normal summer range of 614 to 614.5 feet above sea level. The measurement comes from Basin 1 near the city's water treatment plant. Geiger said it could be a few inches deeper in other parts of the lake, such as Basins 4 and 5. While an influx of water can sometimes create water treatment challenges, Geiger said those were mostly limited to earlier in the summer. Nitrogen that could cause issues has mostly been washed off the fields and diluted or is being absorbed by the crops. The city used activated carbon to remove a musty smell from drinking water in late May or early June, but that challenge has not resurfaced, he said. Taste and odor are typically caused by organic compounds that come from breakdown of blue-green algae to methylisoporanol, MIB. Well, maybe it's MLB, and geosmin. They are not known to be harmful to humans. The water coming in is lessening the need for more treatment. Boaters are likely to notice more debris than usual, said Joe Neheiser, lake maintenance supervisor. He said lake users should be cautious because of the potential for branches, tree limbs, and other debris, though no problems have been reported. Neheiser encouraged boaters also to be aware of currents when passing under bridges. With the amount of water coming in, the currents are really strong. End of the article on Lake Decatur. And now the article by Kurt Erickson, Herald and Review, that probably prompted the editorial. It's "More Sniping, Precious Little Progress on State Budget," is the article from the staff writer for Herald and Review. Springfield, with no end in sight to an impasse that has left state government in limbo, Democrats spent Tuesday shining a spotlight on plans by Governor Bruce Rauner to reduce the number of senior citizens who receive state assistance. Just as their counterparts in the House have tried to paint the Republican chief executive as a threat to the poor and middle class, state Democrats held news conferences and conducted a formal hearing Tuesday on Rauner's plan to alter a ranking system that determines who gets government help and who doesn't. The governor has proposed changing the rankings in order to take away aid from thousands of seniors and disabled Illinoisans. While Rauner says his administration needs to find savings because of a decrease in revenue after the expiration of the temporary tax increase in January, Democrats said the impact would be devastating. Seniors will have to be sicker and poorer to receive home care services moving forward if Governor Rauner's cuts remain in place, noted a media alert issued by State Senator Andy Menar, Democrat, Bunker Hill. The criticism of Rauner's plan is just the latest attack on the governor's agenda by Democrats who control the General Assembly. Rauner wants lawmakers to approve changes to worker compensation laws, civil justice reform, and rules for labor unions before he'll sign off on a tax increase to balance the budget. The lack of a budget for more than 2 weeks has already led to pain at social service agencies, including closures and layoffs. The Senate could vote as early as today to override Rauner's veto of the spending plan. The Senate also could approve a temporary budget designed to keep paychecks flowing and programs operating through July. The Senate adjourned after just a few minutes Tuesday because not enough members showed up. But even if enough members show up for the override to emerge from Senate, it remains unclear whether there's enough support for an override in the House. And even Democrats are wary of overriding the out-of-balance budget. State Senator Daniel Biss, Democrat, Evanston, for example, suggested that without enough money to make it through the entire fiscal year, Rauner could use his executive power to cut even more programs that Democrats believe are needed. Let's just be clear. If that's the least worst option, yikes. The governor has to manage the budget. If we enact the budget by overriding the veto and the governor is not willing to manage it, the outcome for people of Illinois will be a poor outcome, Biss said. The standoff has left Democrats with little to do but hold a series of hearings and other events to chip away at Rauner's initiatives. On July 1st, the administration outlined a plan to boost the threshold for the community care program, which provides in-home services to elderly and disabled Illinoisans. Under the proposed changes, the minimum score to qualify assistance would increase to 37 from 29. The score takes into account a number of factors to establish how well a person can live on his or her own. Opponents of the change said it could force more people into nursing homes, which are more expensive than in-home programs. Mary Snell of Springfield said the program allows her and her husband John to stay at home. In addition to the assistance they receive from a state-funded helper, John spends 8 hours a week at a senior center. And it's a 24-hour-a-day job. Without help, I'm not sure I can do it, Mary Snell said. End of the article. Article from Ameren. New Ameren substation powers city flow of electricity. This is by Tom Reed from a staff writer. The Decatur, the German group Snap, enjoyed a worldwide hit in 1990 with a song that featured the pounding hook line, "I've Got the Power." charge forward 25 years, and at the Ameren Illinois Electrical Substation Enhancement Project at 515 East Main Street was in the market for a theme song. It could do worse. This substation really does have the power, all 138,000 volts of it. It's one of the key on-ramps for electrical engineer flowing and energy. It's one of the key on-ramps for electrical energy flowing into the city for thousands of homes, dozens of small businesses, and a handful of industrial giants such as the Mueller Water Products Company. All in all, it supplies a third of Decatur's power needs. But Ameren Illinois is particularly concerned about what happens when it doesn't have the power if something goes wrong. The substation's six-month, $3.5 million overhaul, finished in June, is part of its answer to that crucial what if. New equipment upgrades have seen the installation of enhanced circuit switching gear featuring SCADA, S-C-A-D-A, all caps, SCADA, which stands for Supervisory Control and Data Acquisition. SCADA enables us to see what's going on and enables us to remotely open and close breakers and restore power much faster, said Matt Johnson, 55, the utility superintendent of substation and relay for its Division 3 zone, which covers the Decatur, Springfield, and Bloomington areas. Other key Main Street substation improvements include its massive transformers, which have been beefed up to handle more power and can now be switched by remote control. And engineers can also use remote control to switch between the major north and south power lines, which feed the substation. Before, all these transformer and feed control operations had to be done manually, burning up lots of frustrating time when problems arose. Johnson also said that the Main Street substation is part of a key power triangulation with other major substations at North 27th Street and North Martin Luther King Drive, supplying power to industrial giants such as Archer Daniels Midland Company and Tate & Lyle. Any two substations can handle the load of the remaining one to keep the system operational if there's a titanic problem. They all back each other up, he said. But before we did the improvement work, well, let's say the East Main substation would have been getting too close to its upper limit parameters if that situation arose. Johnson said he knows talking enhanced switching gear and breakers and wires causes a serious power fade in most people's attention spans. But he's also keenly aware how the public's interest in his day job spikes dramatically as soon as the lights go dark. It's just all part of our overall plan of service reliability and improvements across the state, he said. We're working on it. So this is the end of that article and the end of part one for Wednesday, July 15th, 2015. This is Debbie signing off on part one, and talk to you again soon in part two.